I'm Dr. Lee Whittinghill. I'm currently assistant professor of urban agriculture at Kentucky State University. I've been there for about a year and a half now, so my research program is sort of just starting to get off the ground. And my appointment is research, teaching, and extension. So I kind of wanted to get a handle on, being relatively new to Kentucky, what urban agriculture in Kentucky looks like to inform my research and my extension activities. How many of you know what urban agriculture is? Okay, so a lot of you. So I don't necessarily need to read the definition. When I talk about urban agriculture, I usually throw up this dictionary definition in mixed crowds. And some people, I think, still have a view of agriculture that looks a lot like what you see here, or a little bit more like this, row agriculture. It's a pretty ingrained picture. But those of us who've worked in urban agriculture know it is much more complicated than that. I have done work on rooftops. All of what you see here was done on rooftops in New York City. So we've got row-looking agriculture, different types of containers that were purchased or found objects, some animal husbandry as well. Even at ground level, you have a wide variety of different activities going on and different production methods being used. We also have to recognize that there's some controlled environment and indoor production in terms of, in this case, it's aquaculture in a facility. We have a lot of larger community gardens, but also backyard or, in this case, front yard gardening that may look very different from each other as well. So my goals were to get an understanding of what types of practices are being used and how they're being used in Kentucky, and who is doing the farming or gardening. And I already mentioned my last goal of using this information to inform what treatments I might use in my research, what directions I might need to take in my extension programming. So I developed a survey. It's 43 questions long, excluding the demographics. It takes between 15 and 30 minutes to fill it out. So far we've been doing this as in-person interviews. Some of them have taken a little bit longer because we usually do a farm tour alongside. Sometimes we get a little off track. We also had one with some refugee farmers that required an interpreter, and that one took a lot longer. So the questions cover a few categories: general farm characteristics, production techniques, crop selection, nutrient irrigation, pest and disease management practices, what tools the farmers are using, and what types of resources they use to help make their decisions. So I mentioned we're doing these as in-person interviews. So far we have 18 responses of our target 50. So at this point we think we've reached pretty much all of the highly visible farmers, especially in Lexington and Louisville, which are our closest major cities. So we are going to be changing our tactics a little bit. I'm sending my graduate student out to farmers markets in Louisville to administer the survey to try and get some of the population that doesn't have a Facebook page or a web page or is part of an organization that Kentucky State University already has a relationship with. So we ran into them somewhere and we're able to give them our card and make contact that way. We're also working on putting a web version of the survey out there so that we can distribute flyers to various locations around the cities that might be frequented by backyard gardeners, and also advertise it with beekeeping associations and permaculture guilds and other groups like that that have a web page, but you can't necessarily easily contact all of the members. So I've got some preliminary results, and at the moment we haven't really done a lot of statistical analysis, although I will explain a few directions I would like to go when I have more data. And all of the descriptive statistics were done in R. So one of the questions I asked was how the farm business is organized. And we have a lot of people who identified as sole proprietorships with a formal business structure, but we also had just as many, about 22%, said they didn't really have a formal structure, they're just backyard gardeners. We also had quite a few, 16% each, are institutional or 501c3, so nonprofits. In regards to this 501c3 official nonprofit structure, only 20% of the people who reported that they do not run their operation for profit are structured as 501c3s. I think a lot of them, the community gardens and institutional gardens, are also sort of donation or cost offset type operations. I asked what the firm's major expenses are, and there were two things that really stood out from the others: seed sets, plants, transplants, or planting stock was identified as one of the top three expenses by 72% of the farmers. Fertilizer, lime, soil conditioners, and compost was second most identified at 62%. I find this really interesting because I am interested in water quality issues and nutrient management practices, and this says to me that if we can figure out better ways for farmers to make their management of fertility more efficient, we will save them money. And that's especially important when we're talking about nonprofits and organizations that don't have a lot of income. I asked two questions about soil testing, one for contaminants. Pollutants, heavy metals, and other contaminants are fairly common in urban soils. And the second was for whether or not they've tested for fertility. The majority of farmers said no to both questions. Of the farmers who said yes, they have tested, the good news is that none of them reported having to do any remediation. So levels weren't high enough to be of concern. This again ties in with that fertilizers and compost are one of the biggest expenses. If they're not testing fertility of the soil, are they applying appropriate amounts of fertilizer? There may be automatic savings if they understood what the fertility of their soil was. I also asked if they grow in native or imported soil. This isn't necessarily very interesting on its own, but one question I would like to look at more is, if farmers did test their soil for contamination or fertility, are they more likely to grow in the native soil than farmers who didn't? Or conversely, are farmers who don't test for fertility more likely to use imported soil that's marketed as good for gardening or good for growing without going through that testing process? I asked three separate questions about record keeping. Record keeping is a really tough issue with a lot of farmers. The first question was about record keeping for crop yields. The second about how much fertilizer amendments are used. The third, which isn't shown here, was for irrigation. None of my respondents so far keep track of irrigation. Again, there's an obvious relationship of if they're keeping track of how much fertilizers they put down, they may have some idea of, well, I purchased too much last year, and that's why my costs were so high. If they're not, there isn't necessarily room to make those kinds of decisions for next year. Okay. I asked what types of nutrients they use, and compost was far and away the most used by farms, followed by commercial organic fertilizers and non-commercial amendments or additives such as manure. This we have already used to inform our treatments that we're using in a controlled experiment on how nutrient management practices relate to runoff water quality. So we have a commercial organic fertilizer treatment, a compost treatment, and a conventional fertilizer treatment. Some of the farmer demographics. So far, our urban farmers are predominantly male. Interestingly, most of our farmers are between the ages of 26 and 35, which is very different from the average age of farmers according to the farm census. In 2012, I believe the U.S. average was 58, and the Kentucky average is 55. So we're looking at a very different demographic in terms of age. So far, our farmers are predominantly white or Caucasian, and most identify as leaning more towards the liberal side of their political affiliation. You'll notice the large portion, white portion on the race and ethnicity were some of the African immigrants that we spoke to who farm in Louisville, and those correspond with the gray, not eligible portion on the political affiliation. Our farmers, urban farmers and gardeners have a very wide range of experience, ranging from 2 years to 65, and 1 to 50 years of experience actually making farming decisions. And most of them identify as hobby, resident, or non-commercial farmers. The last one, our urban farmers are fairly educated. A lot of them have a bachelor's degree or higher, and fairly high household incomes. And that's sort of where we are right now. We're hoping to get a lot more information from our next few rounds of implementation. And I think we're going to be able to look at a lot of interesting questions that have implications for our extension programming as well as our future research. Questions? Yes, so the question is, did I ask if they own or rent the property? I did, and I gave them the option of saying it's owned, it's rented, or some of each, because there are some organizations that do both. I didn't show that here, but I will be collecting that information. Yes? They ranged in size from 20 square feet to 4 acres. We have a group that's very fortunate to have a large plot of vacant land in Louisville. It used to be a housing development that got torn down, and so they have an agreement with the city to use the land, and that's the 4-acre farm. The average is 0.8 acres.
Were any of these farmers, did they have mixed models? Like, we're often, I think, an urban farm is associated with the kids' summer camp. Did you see that?
So the question is if the farms have mixed models. A lot of them are very diversified. Not as many as I was expecting had chickens, which is one of the most common forms of livestock. But in terms of production practices, I gave them a list of possible practices they could select from. And trying to remember off the top of my head, I think the average number of different kinds of practices was probably at least 4. Organic being a predominant, one of the most highly selected, along with crop rotation. But there's some that mix permaculture with intercropping and intercropping of annuals, as well as some that have both hydroponic or aquaponics, as well as raised beds. A number of them have more than one type of bed structure. So I gave them the options of containers, raised beds, in-ground, or mounds. And I think the average was 2 different types of those. So there's a lot of different things going on and a lot of different things going on in one place. The 4-acre farm is actually a combination of community garden where people can rent plots, which are managed by individuals, and there you see a lot of Three Sisters and intercropping, and then on the other side is run as a CSA, and that's the side where we see row agriculture happening.